Everyone, welcome to the newest edition of All the Way. This is your host, Big John.
And I'm DV.
Oh, man. DV, man, have you been working out? You look massive this week.
Yeah, look, I can move my breastises.
Oh, wow. Can you put on pasties and make them propeller in opposite directions when you do that?
No.
No?
No. No means no. Like, okay. Really means no.
Me too. Hashtag me too. Anyway. Okay. This is All the Way. This is the show where we address both the serious and the inane. And on any given show, if you placed your bet on inane content, you'd probably be right. All right. This week, DV, what do you think we got this week? Any guesses?
No.
Okay.
We don't do show prep.
I don't. I really don't. We don't do any show prep at all. I literally walk into this studio, I wait for DV to finish setting up the cameras and the microphones and all that fun stuff, and then I hand him a piece of paper with five or six bullet points on it, to wit, something like this, ladies and gentlemen, and the poor bastard has to figure out what's in my head while the cameras are rolling live. We don't do takes. Yes, it's not a live show, DV, but this is what they used to call in old days live to tape.
The old days,
live to tape. The concept being that, yes, it's recorded, but it's all done in one shot. Like, you know, like the Johnny Carson shows and things like
that.
Only time they re-recorded something was if, like, someone dropped dead on the stage or something.
Has that ever happened?
I think they said something like Carson, it only happened once or twice in 20-something years, 30 years, however long he was on. And most of it had to do, like, I think one infamous case was some chick fell out of her blouse or something, you know, that they obviously couldn't show on TV, so they had to redo that. But for the most part, those shows were shot live to tape. So, yeah, it wasn't streamed live a lot of cases, like Letterman's the same way. Like, typically, mm-hmm. They used to shoot Letterman, I think, at 5 o'clock the day of.
Right, right.
You know, or 4 o'clock the day of, and then they just package it up, you know, with commercials and stuff, but anyway. So, yeah, we're pseudo-live. Maybe that's the more...
Pseudo-live.
Pseudo-live. But anyway, this week's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is good things ruined by change. Good things ruined by change in my lifetime. So it's my lifetime, DV. It's not in all of history. Mm-hmm. Right? So we're not going to include, say, the 19th Amendment that gave women the right to vote. We are not including... things like that, because that was before my time.
And we're not including, like, anything like if you're a pederast, right?
Have what?
A pederast.
What's that?
It's like a pedophile.
Oh.
Yeah, because I'm sure they get mad at the change.
Yes.
That's horrible. See what happens? I hang out with John, Big John, too much, and just my mind gets all messed up. I totally
messed
blame
up
Big John.
Or straightened out.
No, it's totally messed up, man.
Oh, okay,
definitely messed up.
All right. Before DV gets says something that will get him in further hot water with his woman, let's move on to the next one. Okay, so the first thing that changed, a good thing that changed in my lifetime. AC/DC, the band AC/DC, ladies and gentlemen. DV, you're part of the younger generation. You've heard of AC/DC, haven't you?
Yeah, that's like the electric current or whatever in your, like the socket, in the, right? No?
No. No. We're talking about the group.
Oh, like a group of sockets?
AC/DC, one of the greatest bands, their album Back in Black. I think it was in 1980, 81. I think it's the second most popular album in terms of sales ever. Huh. But anyway, Back in Black, most people, especially your age, only know of AC/DC with their lead singer, Brian Johnson. Back in Black, Thunderstruck, all these great tunes. And no doubt, Brian Johnson, great singer. But what a lot of people don't know is the original AC/DC, their frontman was somebody named Bon Scott. And if you hear the original AC/DC lineup, the two young brothers, Phil Rudd, Charlie Williams, I think his name, and Bon Scott, amazing, amazing, hard-driving. Look, I think I can make the argument, DV, that these guys were among the first punk bands, even though they were isolated in Australia. Uh-huh. When they formed up in 73, when you listen to some of those tunes, they're all about individualism, hard driving, double entendre, great songs like, I'm sure people have heard of Highway to Hell.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll. Those were all originally written and performed by Bon Scott. Most people have heard the Brian Johnson versions that come out in like the concert tapes and everything, or the covers. But Highway to Hell, Long Way to the Top, If You Want Blood, You Got It, and tremendous tunes. Bad Boy Boogie, one of the deep cuts of AC/DC. If you ever get a chance, go on YouTube or get it on iTunes, DV. Bad Boy Boogie, a fantastic song, all about rebellion. And there's a movement in Australia, DV.
Oh, yeah?
To make their song, Jailbreak, the national anthem in some quarters.
How's that go?
I'm a horrible singer, so I'm not going to do it any justice. But Jailbreak is about a guy who got sent to a penal colony. And all he dreams about is penises. No, is escaping. Anyway, so a lot of people think it's very emblematic of the whole Australian thing, because obviously they're an island full of criminals sent there by the English. But right. But anyway, AC/DC, as good as they are, as people know them today, even better before the death of Bon Scott. So him drinking and puking himself to death was a thing that led to bad change.
Yes, you know, I'm like remembering some of their videos.
Yeah.
And the singer that I remember, like, he had like a tank top and like
a little hat, right?
Hat.
Yeah, that's Brian Johnson.
That's Brian Johnson.
He's the guy who replaced him, gotcha. Or the guy they got. And it's do yourselves a favor. Go look up the original AC/TNT, which is a great song. I'm TNT, I'm dynamite, you know, that song. Usually a lot of fighters come out to it originally, again, sung by the great Bon Scott. So if you look at him, look him up on YouTube, do yourselves a favor. The second thing that was great, ruined by chains, MASH. You know the TV show MASH? It's in all reruns now, DV?
Yeah, that's with the guy with the big nose.
Yeah, Alan Alda.
Oh, no, Jamie Farr.
Jamie Farr.
Jamie Farr.
Sorry, I thought you meant like just a regular big nose. You're talking about a schnoz.
I'm talking Jamie about Farr. Like if you're running away from the police and you need to hide, you're just going up the nostril. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, Jamie Farr, much respect for initiating the transgender movement.
Did he? Oh, that's right. He did. You're right. That's right.
So anyway, and that's my point. The original MASH, the first three or four seasons of MASH, MASH was a comedy. It was a goofball comedy based on the movie that starred Elliot Gould and Robert Duvall was in the original MASH movie. And then the original TV series, the first three or four seasons were based on the movie. So it was a comedy. It was funny. It laughs all around, some risque stuff, mainly just oddball, lowbrow humor. But what happened to change that good time? Well, first of all, the guy who played Colonel Blake, who was a big part of the show, McLean Stevenson, thought he became too big for the show. He thought he was the star. Mm-hmm. So in what is often cited as the biggest blunder in Hollywood history, he quit MASH to join a show called, do you remember know what show he joined?
No.
Actually, it was a show developed specifically for him by NBC.
No.
Hello, Larry was the name of the show. Hello, Larry, which lasted, I think, a season.
The hell is that about?
And then after that, McLean Stevenson was never heard from again.
Yeah.
One of the worst decisions ever in the history of Hollywood. McLean Stevenson just left. And then between seasons 3 and 4, Wayne Rogers, who played Trapper John on the show.
Okay.
Felt his character could no longer be developed. And in what turned out to be prophetic, he said he didn't want to be part of a show where Alan Alda was considered the star. Because initially, MASH was an ensemble comedy. You know, you had six, seven characters, and everybody had the same amount of lines and everything. But as the show progressed, more and more, like, it became obvious that Alan Alda was becoming the breakout star. So Wayne Rogers wanted none of that. And here's a little bit of interesting factoid. Wayne Rogers, who I think passed away recently, a couple of years, actually became very wealthy as an investor and trader.
So
he kind of left Hollywood behind. Yeah, and I think he was a gold investor, you know, stock investor, invested in real estate.
Yeah.
And he actually, I think, became very wealthy, even more wealthy, I should say, outside of Hollywood. But the reason this was a good thing gone bad, DV, is because MASH originally was a comedy that had dramatic undertones.
Right.
Right? After all those guys left, and it was just Alan Alda, it became a drama with slight comedic undertones.
Right.
So here's an interesting fact. I think MASH was on for 14 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The last episode of the series, I think, other than the Super Bowl, holds the record for the largest share of the TV audience.
Wow, what happens in the end? Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, the Korean War ends.
Ah.
Yeah. But anyway, so it was one of their biggest shows ever in network history. But the thing only won like three Emmys rather, in like 14 years. Some ridiculously low number. Wow. Because they always left it in the comedy category. But it had changed to a drama. So every year, like, people would try to nominate MASH for an Emmy as a comedy, and people would say, no, this thing is fucking depressing. It's all about doctors who, you know, have dying patients and war and orphans and shit like that.
Right.
So one of the big things that was a problem with MASH, like, and really, in my opinion, ruined. I know, like, my wife will watch those MASH reruns like 24 hours a day. She loves that show.
Okay.
Once, like, the episodes go past the third season and McLean Stevenson is gone and Wayne Rogers, I just don't even bother watching those shows. I'll just go for the first three seasons, then I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of like, do you ever watch The Wire?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, the first season, fucking awesome.
Right.
Second season by the docs,
Right.
I can skip that. Everything else was awesome. But the second season, though, was like, oh, my God.
Right.
You know, it's kind of slow and whatever, but
But it rebounded, though.
Yeah, big time rebounded.
Yeah, see, that's different than something that changes permanently because something that sucks now because of a single change. And I think that's what these are about. Like, for example, any sequel that Sylvester Stallone is in fucking sucks.
I can't wait for Over the Top 2.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at. Like, the original Rocky.
Yeah.
Rocky 1, if you will.
Right.
Awesome movie.
Yes.
One of the best written movies, I think. Like, if you take a screenwriting class, they always do Rocky. Sylvester Stallone, people don't realize, he wrote the movie.
He wrote the movie, that's right.
Right? And it was his personal passion project.
Yep.
And that movie was fantastic. The subtleties, when you read through the script, you see all these little things. Like, I remember going over this in screenwriting classes once. The opening scene shows a mattress on the wall that he punches instead of a heavy bag because he's poor and he can't afford one. And the only part of the mattress that's worn out is about halfway up from the floor. And you're like, why is that important? Because Rocky Marciano, if you know your boxing, body puncher. If you foreshadowing and later in the movie, what does he do to make the boxing match competitive? He breaks Apollo Creed's ribs.
Yeah.
Right, so foreshadowing, fantastically written movie, okay? Now think of every other Rocky movie that came out afterwards.
Hmm.
Hey, fool. Remember that?
Mr. T. I was going to say B.A. Baracus. Yeah,
right? B.O. It might work. How about this one? I will break you.
Yes.
It's like a hall of fame of stupid catchphrases.
Yeah, but people remember it.
No, they remember it. It doesn't mean it's any good, though.
Well, I mean, you know.
Like the original
part
Rocky.
Of marketing.
Do you agree that the original Rocky is forever ruined because of all the shit that followed?
Yeah, you know what? Quality-wise, definitely.
Yeah.
But entertainment-wise, I mean, I like the sequels.
Well, I'm entertained by those underground videos of two Vietnamese guys playing Russian roulette. It doesn't mean it's like quality, DV.
Wait, didn't they make a movie called Deer Hunter that was basically
Mao? Guess who, Mao?
Oh, my goodness.
Three bullets.
Yeah, yeah, oops, yeah.
Three. Anyway, yeah, but every movie after that. The same thing, by the way, applies to the Rambo movies.
Yeah.
The Rambo First Blood movie was awesome.
That was awesome, yeah.
Every movie since that eats my ass. It's horrible, DV.
Yeah, your ass is horrible.
It is. And if I'm saying...
And so are those Rambo movies.
Those movies, yeah. I'm glad you agree with me because like the one where he's in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like the recent one that came out where he's in Burma.
I didn't see that.
But he's like 75 years old.
Yeah, it's weird. But he's probably in better shape than like
But he's
me.
Better than the elite commando mercenaries that were hired to go save the missionaries. He single-handedly, he's better than all 15 of them.
Right, right.
But he's 70 years old. And God save us, I saw the trailers for the most recent Rambo flick where he goes home and his niece is in trouble.
Uh-oh. Watch out now. Don't mess with Rambo's niece.
It's like he's becoming Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, like these stupid movies. Where every time Schwarzenegger has to save a young female family member from something.
Right, right, right.
So yeah, Stallone movies, things change. You know what changes? He wants to make another one in all these series, DV. That's the biggest problem.
Yeah.
And you can't get around it with the old Sly. He just sucks in all these sequels.
Hey, but you know what? I'm not going to be a hater. Good for you, Sly. Do your thing.
You know he doesn't watch this, right?
You never know. And if he does, John is the asshole. That guy.
I can't argue
I'm
with that.
I'm a fan.
I can't argue with that.
And yeah!
All right. The next thing that changed for the worse, Twinkies. Ding dongs. Snowballs. I'm referring to those wonderful Hostess treats that we used to poison ourselves on as kids. These were the shit, DV. Like, are you telling me you've never enjoyed a good Twinkie?
No, not
a good Twink, which I'll leave that part of your life unexplored. But I'm talking about Twinkies, you know, the cake treat.
Right, you know, because, well, see, for me, Twinkies mean something else. You know, I'm Asian, obviously.
Yes.
And they say that we're yellow, right?
Are they?
Yeah, well... If you really look deep, my cousin made me look, and I was like, oh, shit. But yeah, no, he fucked me up because we kind of are yellow. So Twinkie for me means my cock.
Does it?
Yeah, because, you know, it's yellow, and I got cream inside.
Ah, see, I did not know that.
Yeah, so don't eat a Twinkie again, dude.
Oh, now, yeah, look, huh? Crossing Twinkie off the list. What about ding-dongs? Any Asian connotations to ding-dongs?
Well, I mean, you know, dongs.
Yeah.
You know?
And Snowball. Hey, you know what? These fucking Hostess things were named after sexual shit.
Yeah.
I just realized this. Twinkies,
yeah.
Ding dongs, snowballs, ho-hos, or whatever the fuck they are.
That's ho-hos, that's right.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
And I thought I was just enjoying delicious after school treats.
Nope. They were turning you into a pervert, and it worked.
God damn it. But let me tell you this, though. They at least used to taste good before Hostess went into bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Twice. Oh,
wow.
I think in 2009 and 2014, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, they've come out. They're on the market again, and they suck.
Oh, man.
Like, even for unhealthy treats, they suck.
Wow. They don't even taste good?
They're horrible.
Oh, man.
They are absolutely horrible. All right. Even if you do get past these ho-hos and Twinkies and everything else, DV... You know what else has changed for the worse?
What's that?
The NFL.
The NFL.
The NFL. Now, let me just explain something about the NFL. Between this replay nonsense, have you seen this replay nonsense,
TV? Oh, it's horrible with the pass interference.
With the pass interference?
Yeah.
Like, you know what that generally comes down to?
What's that?
Coaches now have three chances at the end of the game.
Right.
To just get a bullshit call go
That's
their way.
Right.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
And they're like, what do they've got to lose?
And the ratio or like the success rate is pretty low. It's like only like 7 out of like 30 something.
Worst thing they ever did was this replay. Listen, this is the equivalent of killing a fly with a sledgehammer. Okay. This rule came into being because of that botched PI call in the NFC Championship game last year where the Saints, like, look, People think they got fucked out of the Super Bowl because of that call. The reason they got fucked out of the Super Bowl is because Sean Payton decided to throw passes instead of running the ball.
Yeah. Kill the clock.
Yeah, kill the clock and kick a field goal, you shithead. All right? Now, Saints fans can think it was that blown PI call all they want, DB, but we know better. But anyway, so the NFL overreacted as it usually does, and now we're stuck in this loop like we were a couple of years ago when all of a sudden nobody could figure out what a fucking catch was anymore. Oh, did he, like, control it on the way to the ground? Did the ground help him secure it, or did it just touch the ground without helping him secure it? Like, in an effort to make replay, they're now involving the referee's judgment even more.
Yeah.
Like, we saw this game last night. It was the Packers and the
Eagles.
And the Eagles. And I swear to you, every challenged call for pass interference was pass interference.
Yeah.
According to the rule books, it was pass interference. I saw one super slow-mo where the defender on the Eagles, on the Packers, literally slapped away Alshon Jeffrey's hands
right
before the pass got there.
Yep.
And the referee goes, oh, there's no indication that this affected his ability to catch the ball. What are you talking about?
Horrible.
The guy moved his hands out of the way and the ball bounced off the receiver's chest, for Christ's sake.
Yep. And the Eagles just took it, too. Like, okay, let's go.
Well, what could they do at that point?
You know what I mean? I would have been pissed. I mean, was it Doug Peterson? They were pissed, wasn't even pissed.
They challenged it, but what could they do, right?
No, but that's an obvious... That's my point.
I'd rather live with the refs missing the occasional call.
Right.
Than thinking, look, here's the problem. In football, in professional football, there's a penalty on every play.
Yeah.
There's a penalty on every play, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
I don't know if you realize it or not. DV and I both played ball in high school. What happens on every play? There's holding in the trenches.
Oh,
every
play. Big time.
There's illegal contact on every pass route.
Mm-hmm.
There's pass interference, I guarantee you, on just like about at least 60% of the pass plays. The truth of the matter is the NFL refs get like 98% of the calls right.
Mm.
The problem is when they miss one, it tends to be a big miss, right?
Yes.
So what you have to do is just pay these refs full time. Have them train all year. Be like Ed Hockley with the guns and running around and all that, right? That's how you take care of that nonsense. You don't ruin football. I mean, right now, between the thing with the rules changes and what's this thing about being pussies over concussions?
Like No.
Now it's like football has become the equivalent of soccer. This is horrible. It's only a step. Look. Professional football in the U.S. used to be the sport of kings.
Right. Better Gladiator style.
Better than diamond ring.
Oh, my God.
It's the sport of kings. Football. Bonus points if you know what movie that came from and who sang it.
That was Wildcats?
Wildcats.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
You like that, right? And it was, wasn't it Bubba from Forrest Gump?
No.
Okay.
It was Goldie Hawn, who was the first female coach, Wildcats.
Yeah. But listen, she said, okay.
No hate, man. You get 100% respect for knowing that off
See,
the cuff.
You don't do show prep.
There you go. No show prep.
That was actually one of my favorite Bird.
It's one of those stupid movies that, you know, you grew up watching in the 80s. But anyway, football really was a sport of kings, and like it was for men. Now I know for a lot of you snowflake millennials or whatever, like I'm a Gen Xer, but like I mean, literally the fact that you want to refer to something as being a man's sport or a man's job or something probably sounds offensive to you.
Mm.
Are you talking about cis men or transgender men's or men's that are women's half the time? No. I'm talking about men in the only definition that counts, DB.
What's that definition?
Mine. Look.
What do you think you are, Trump?
Look, the truth of the matter is football was a sport for rough and tumble men. Just like rugby is a sport for rough and tumble men, all right?
Now, rugby, hold on, just real quick.
Yeah.
Rugby, that's a tough sport.
Of course.
Now, I think for football, if you want to get rid of, like, you know, concussions and all this type of shit, get rid of the equipment.
You're probably right. A lot of people have said that the better the equipment becomes, the more it gave players the license to make harder hits, right?
Right.
Because people don't realize this, or the common person doesn't realize this unless you've played ball, but If you're running at full speed and you hit a player, if you're a defender hitting a player at full speed, an offensive player, it hurts you too.
Yeah, it does. But you don't give a shit because you feel like you're a warrior with all this armor on.
Of course.
It's like, I'm going to knock this dude out.
Of course.
Boom. And then like you get a little bit knocked out too.
Yeah. But you know what happened is the game now, I think personally, that idiot Chris Collinsworth made a good point. He goes, look, defenders now are so worried about going anywhere near the head of a receiver or a runner or a quarterback that what's left for them to hit, the knees.
Yeah.
And that's actually causing more damage to players,
right,
in his opinion.
Right.
Right? Because to be fair to defensive players, what are they left to hit?
That's true.
You can't lead with the helmet.
Right.
Odds are you can't lead with your shoulder because it looks like you've led with your helmet.
Right.
Like a lot of these supposedly helmet-to-helmet hits, DV, when I watch them in slow motion, I really think they were shoulder tackles.
Yeah, no, that like, you know, I immediately think like Ronnie Lott, you know, like right there. Just boom, he's like shoulders. But yeah, it looks like he's like spearheading.
Talk about a man's man, Ronnie Lott. We all know the story. He broke his pinky, I think before the championship game.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor said, look, man, you got to sit out the game. And he goes, no, I won't miss this game. Do something. And the doctor jokingly said, well, the only thing that would help is if we amputated the pinky. And he said, take it off. And if you look at the dude now, it's now bullshit.
Yeah.
Half his pinky is gone.
Yeah.
Because rather than miss the championship game, that man decided, take the pinky off.
Yep.
If that'll let me play. Now, is that insane?
Who's to say? Yes, it is. It is.
But you don't have players like that anymore.
No.
You definitely don't.
No.
I'm not saying they're not passionate for the game or whatever, but that sort of drive. The league itself, now look, they're trying to protect. I get it. But the game has suffered, DV. You have to admit. The game itself has suffered because defense can't play. Like, what happened? There used to be a job on the field for a safety whose only job was to knock receivers who dared go in the middle unconscious.
Yep.
For Christ's sake, Jack Tatum killed a man on the field once. And I don't think he ever apologized to the guy.
No, he didn't kill him. Too concussed. He paralyzed
him with a hit in a preseason game. Daryl Stingley broke his neck. But it wasn't on purpose, but I think Daryl Stingley, if I recall, said Jack Tatum never even apologized to him, never visited him, never apologized to him. It's a different game now. And unfortunately, in my opinion, it's for the worse. It's ballet dancing now. It's flag football for the most part. And I know people are going to say, you fat fuck, you've never played in the, you know. I get it. I've never played professional football. But I've been watching football since I've been old enough to watch TV, which was like 3. My oldest memories, I think I was, let's see, if it was the 73 season, I was 8 years old. Those are my first memories watching the Dolphins go undefeated in 1973.
Oh, wow.
Like, literally, those are my first football memories. Norm Snead of the Giants. And, I mean, Larry Zonka was my favorite player, man, because I read somewhere that he broke his nose something like 14 times in one season.
Sheesh.
That's why he wore that little horseshoe on his helmet over his nose.
Yeah,
if you see any famous pictures of him, it's because he kept breaking his nose, and he just would refuse to go out of the game. So, anyway, that's how football has changed for the bad. Under the alleged guise of player safety. All right, DV. Another thing that's changed, and for the worse, my body.
I agree.
My body has gone to hell, yo. It's been destroyed by age. I wake up every morning. Every joint in my body hurts.
Mm-hmm.
I swear to you, I keep forgetting things that I know I should remember. That's the most infuriating part. Like, sometimes I'll see an actor on TV, DV, and I know who that is. He was, and I'll, in my mind, I rattle off all the movies he was in, and I can't remember his fucking name.
I do that too.
And it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and I had a sharp mind at one point, ladies and gentlemen. At one point I did. The worst part about my body changing, thanks to Father Time, you know what they say, tempus fugit, throwing some Latin at you there, DV. But you know what the worst part is?
What's that?
My balls are so saggy, I sit on them at least twice a week.
I don't need to hear that. That's gross.
See, that hasn't happened to you at your age.
No,
yet.
Not yet. Is but, that what I have to look forward to?
Believe me, you look forward to it. Your balls, unless you're like Liberace and you get like a ball lift, like plastic surgery to get your testicles lifted.
That's a thing?
Yeah, it's a thing.
That's weird.
Yeah. But unless you do that, your balls start to sag. Then if you're like me, you're kind of nonchalant about sitting down. And you catch your balls under your ass cheek. And it's like the biggest pain in the world. It's like Pele just kicked you in the nuts or something. It is painful. And now it's happening twice a week.
Oh, my God.
Like, I'll sit down at home for dinner and I'll pop up screaming. My wife thinks like there's a poltergeist in the house because I just sat on my balls again.
Oh, my gosh. You should be used to it by now, right?
You would think. But I think my shrieks of pain change every time. That's why gaining weight hurts, too.
Ah, yeah. I know all about that.
But it's true. If you're a man, believe me, you will eventually get to the point in your life where you sit on your balls at least once, and you will remember the sage words of Big John when it happens. You'll be like, God damn it. He was right.
I have to adjust my balls right now. Just thinking
about
it. There you
go. Just thinking about it. Just play with those suckers right there. All right. And then the final thing. That the final great thing that's been ruined by change in my lifetime, the United States.
Oh, wow.
The United States.
Get deep.
Yeah, it's been ruined, DV.
Uh-huh.
Listen, the United States was once a land, a nation of rugged individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Like people who only wanted an opportunity, a chance to succeed. They didn't give a shit about the government. You know, the government, up until recently, DV, mm-hmm. was viewed as a horrible thing.
Yeah.
Like, nobody wanted to say they worked for the government in the 1800s right. or at the turn of the last century, in the yeah. 1900s. That was like, that just meant that you were too stupid to make it in the real world.
Right.
Right? The government was really a dirty word.
Yeah.
Right? And you had people go out there, like, we colonized this country. People think that people, what do you think? People showed up on the Mayflower, you know, at Plymouth Rock, and the next thing you know, they were in L.A. shooting movies. You know, that took a lot of pioneering spirit, you know? Like, that's why just about every other nation on this planet loves American Westerns to this day. You go to Japan or China... Stalin used to love watching John Wayne movies because the concept of the American West, of like your nation that you're still exploring.
Right.
Not even conquering, really. It was exploring and migrating westward and establishing cities and building these great towns and everything. That is a mythology that is uniquely American. Especially in the last 200-300 years of world history, if you think about it.
Right.
Like the only other one I can think of is like maybe exploring, you know, Africa,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that has a different vibe to it because not too many people established like really prosperous centers. Whereas in America, it seems they went west.
Right.
And then you had a population explosion as you moved
west.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But you also had prosperity as you moved west. It wasn't mm-hmm. like they moved west because they were poor and they stayed poor.
Right.
They moved west and then the next thing you know.
Oil, gold, all that shit.
Yeah. Yep. Killing Indians, building casinos. It was fantastic. But anyway, but that's what our nation was, right?
Right.
And now what have we become, DV? A bunch of whining pussies. A bunch of people that it seems that every solution to every problem is, what's the government going to do to fix this?
Yeah.
How can Washington come down and fix this? How can the state capitol take care of this? Fuck that. You know, let's get back to being individuals with pride and self-sufficiency. Like, do you know, have you ever read Graham Hancock? Or have you heard of him?
No.
He's actually an author who believes that there's no such thing really as aliens.
Okay.
But that the Earth has probably been destroyed a couple of times over. So, like, the stuff that we think aliens may have left behind, like the pyramids or Stonehenge or something like right. that, was actually the remnants of the civilizations that existed before us.
Interesting.
Like, so think about it. If a meteor strike hit and wiped out 90% of the population,
mm-hmm.
that's considered a civilization-ending event, a CEE.
Right.
Right? If you think about the Black Plague in Europe, mm-hmm. like, that thing almost wiped out the entire human race at that point, right? So it's not unthinkable that things happen, whether it's a meteor or some weird virus or something, right, that could wipe out humanity.
Yeah.
Eventually, if there was just two people left to fuck, we would rebuild the population, right?
Right.
But ask yourself this question. How many of us could survive for 3 days without electricity, without gas, without your car, without your phone?
Yeah.
Like, the more technology gives us, the more it takes away.
Right. And hold on. Wait a minute.
Yes, sir.
No, I gotta check my messages.
Oh, son of a bitch.
I'm good, though. I'm a survivor.
But you know what the survivalists say, DV? All it takes to go from society to anarchy is 9 meals. If a person goes 9 meals or 3 days without eating, he becomes a savage. He'll kill his own cousins for food. You know what I mean? And that's when you have a complete breakdown of society. And for the most part, I don't think it's exaggeration.
No, I mean, because like in America, you got some fat asses that'll kill their cousins for a meal if they miss one meal.
Right, right. But think about it. Could you, with all your knowledge, let's say you were one of the 5-10 people left alive after some weird event, right?
Okay.
How much, like, you would know of things, so you could write these stories that say, hey, we used to have these little boxes where you could instantly watch a movie.
Yeah.
What's a movie? Well, it was this form of entertainment where, you know, we would watch people fucking on a screen. No, we wouldn't fuck.
Yeah.
We would watch other people fuck.
Right, right.
Who had fucked. It was a replay of fucking.
Right.
Right? Now, think how that sounds to someone who's never seen that before. It sounds almost like aliens, right? It almost sounds like some superior race. Because why? Even though you know about an iPhone, even though you know what it looks like, you can even possibly get the basic principles. You can never build one by yourself, let's face it, right?
Because I'm not a Chinese kid. And
you're not a Chinese kid. You're not trapped in a building surrounded by nets.
Right.
You know, but my point being, like, we don't know how to survive. I doubt 80% of Americans, let me rephrase that. I doubt 20% of Americans could start a fire.
Yeah.
Without lighter fluid.
Right.
Right? I doubt too many Americans would know how to kill an animal, skin it, and cook it for food.
Yeah.
Right.
See, I can do the fire, but the skin it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's. Now, by the way, I'm not talking about caveman shit. These are skills that maybe your grandparents had.
Right. Boy Scouts. That's how I learned how to do the fire.
Yeah. Or parents. Yeah. Right. Or your parents, maybe if you live in certain areas, or maybe if you came from overseas or something. Right.
Right.
So the fact that we can't do any of this shit, Americans, is both a testament to our knowledge and our innovation. But it's also a testament to the fact that we have no survival skills. And this is a change from the fact that we expect others to take care of us.
Yeah.
And more often than that, that's the government.
Yeah.
Right? And that's, ladies and gentlemen, is the major change that has ruined the greatest thing on the planet. Like, everyone knows, I'm not a Trump guy. But the truth of the matter was, this country was the greatest country on earth. I say was, because it no longer is.
And what country would that be now?
I honestly don't know.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I think most countries have devolved into a bucket of shit. This country is getting by on the remnants of what it did.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's sad, for example, that I think Dr. Michio Kaku once recently stated that of all the PhD candidates in the New York college system, there's not one native-born American who's a PhD candidate in the sciences.
Wow.
In the sciences. Let me be very specific.
Yeah.
Okay? They're all foreign-born. Yeah. They're coming here to learn, to go back to their country so they stop living like savages.
So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I won't bore you any longer with why the United States is a good thing gone bad due to change. I just laid it out for you, okay? But rather than continue along this vein, I think it's time to let you go. Go about your business. Until next time, this is Big John.
And DV.
Catch you next time.
Later. Peace.
Don't forget, we'll have more videos, and we've also done some other ones. Hopefully you find them funny. Either click here or click here to get some more.